mothers,
and others.
Popular music and parody.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs, and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music, a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we talk to people from across the industry, artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz, hello, and Shelley.
Hi, that's me.
And we're industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Our guest for this week welcomed us into the weekend every Saturday morning in the late 90s as the co-host of the youth music TV show Recovery. She spent the noughties broadcasting to the UK, spreading musical good news, and more recently, she's been on our screens with ABC TV's The Sound. We love her music writing too, especially her series of interviews with music industry mums for the Australian Music Vault. But behind all of this is decades of experience with and for the music kids of Australia. We are fangirling out like it's 1999 and beyond. Please welcome Jane Gazzo.
Wow, what an intro. Thanks, Shelley.
Jane, we're so excited to have you. Do you mind just starting off by telling us where you like to say, where you see yourself in the music industry, like not just what's on the bottom of your email or, you know, what you chuck on your LinkedIn or on your invoices, but where do you position yourself these days?
Music veteran.
Music veteran.
Ooh. Yeah, music industry veteran.
Wow. So does that mean, that sounds to me like you've come back from a battlefield.
If you call my 3 years in Australian commercial radio a battlefield, yes.
Right. No love there? No love?
It was challenging. It was very challenging.
What is it about? I'd totally forgotten you'd done that. I'm so sorry. You're still upright and what was it about jumping to the commercial world as opposed to being in the safe bosom of the ABC?
They run very differently for a start. And with commercial radio, I just felt my hands were behind my back the entire time, like tied. Quite proverbially tied. I felt that everything needed to be run by people who I felt didn't really know much about music. Mm. And that's a little soul destroying when you are told to banish out all elements of your personality because it's about keeping those mic breaks really tight and keep the music playing. Mind you, the music that has to keep playing is the music that our audience have heard 55 times already that week. I found it really challenging.
Yeah, right, right. And do you think, I mean, not to dig too far, but do you think they got you in? They must have known that you were a person that is not a cookie cutter. You know what I mean? They must have known that you're a really distinct voice in Australia. Why do you think, they thought they could commercialise you, or they're thinking that the commercial world would become a bit more like you rather than the other way around?
I think it was for cred for them. Yeah. I was associated with Melbourne. I brought with me a lot of experience and I'd worked in commercial radio in the UK. Mm. So I did have experience of working in commercial radio over there that I could bring here. But from the moment I got there, I just felt that they didn't really want Jane Gazzo. They wanted a carbon copy of Jane Gazzo that just stuck to the script.
I think also, yeah, it brings into perspective the good radio that's out there. Like, I mean, I'm in Melbourne, Liz is in Sydney, Jane, you're in Melbourne as well. And we have Triple R, we have good old PBS who are doing their radio, you know, membership drive at the moment.
Of course, the wonderfulness that is 2SER that is looking after us now, but of course.
Forgot our home station, 2SER.
So did you find too, like, because then you jump back to, you know, to The Sound and you go back to TV and something like that. How did that change things for you? Because that was all, forgive me if I'm wrong, that was completely locked down, the first version of that. Is that right?
Yeah, so it was May 2020. I started with a season of a show called State of Music, which was put together by the state government to keep musos playing music or doing something during lockdown. And that was so successful. Of course, that was working with the late, great Michael Gudinski. So I had waited a long time to work with him. He promised me at the 1998 ARIA Awards that we would one day work together. And then finally last year, it took a bloody pandemic to make it happen, but he finally rang me May 2020 and said, JG, because he always called me JG, I've got something for you. So we did the State of Music and that was fantastic, but, you know, it was only online. You could only watch it online. And, of course, MG being the go-getter that he is and always looking for something bigger and better, he went, okay, we can take this format and we can put it on ABC potentially. And he managed to, and we did two seasons of that. If someone had told me that I would be beamed across the ABC in the old countdown time slot, I would never have believed them. But B, the fact that my living room was beamed into people's houses every week was just really hard to get my head around. But what an experience. And working with MG, that was just such a highlight for me. So, yeah, last year I know a lot of people had it tough last year, but I was just so blessed. Hi, I'm Jane Gazzo. You're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
I want to think a bit more about your writing, actually, because it seems like something that you're really into at the moment, and I keep seeing these fantastic new music industry mum stories popping up on the website for the Australian Music Vault, which I believe that you're also the chair of one of their committees, which is fantastic. So I love that you have this influence into the musical archiving of Australian sounds. But Liz and I really love that series that you've got about mums. And in that series, you ask your interviewees about their musical memories from their childhood. So we are super keen to turn that, flip it around and actually ask you about musical memories from your own childhood.
You know, a lot of artists I interview always talk about the first time they ever saw David Bowie on TV on the old Grey Whistle Test or Top of the Pops back in the 70s. But for me, it was watching Boy George and Culture Club on Countdown. I think it was with Do You Really Want to Hurt Me or Time, one of those singles, and seeing him for the first time and just thinking, wow. I don't know if it was the androgyny. I don't know if the fact that he was so pretty, like a doll that, you know, I felt that I could, I don't know, dress him up or something. But that was a real turning point for me. I mean, the fact was that I grew up in a suburb called Viewbank, which no one has ever heard. It's kind of between Rosanna and Heidelberg, and nothing ever happened in Viewbank. And I was in a very, you know, I grew up in a very, very ordinary family, not a lot of music around me. So Countdown was my appointment viewing. It was my go-to. It was my escapism too, from a very, very, very ordinary childhood. You know, we didn't go out a lot, you know, boo-hoo. You know, my childhood was fairly unremarkable. So for me, Countdown was just this escapism that I just devoured every week. And everything changed circa 1983, I reckon, or maybe it was 82, when I first saw Boy George. So from there, it just got intense and insane. I started reading and collecting smash hits magazines. I started dressing like Boy George. I had to have everything Boy George related. So that is a really strong memory. And from there you graduate to all the other bands, especially Australian music. I loved Australian New Wave, Pseudo Echo, Real Life, Wawanee, and I just became an absolute music fiend.
And that's the thing too, like does it blow your mind to know, because when you started recovery you must have been really, not that can't have been that many years, like between, maybe we're talking a decade later, is that recovery? When was
So I took recovery when I was in my very early 20s, but I'd been on community radio. Right. I got my start in community radio at around 16, 17 because I was in high school, and it was a joke that I preferred the radio station to high school.
Is that a joke? Oh, that sounds fine to me.
Sounds like reality.
So I had a bit of experience before I got to recovery, but I'd been on Triple R, and then Triple J were looking to increase their presence in Melbourne. They were being accused by the government at the time of being too Sydney-centric. So they wanted to increase their Melbourne output. So they needed another DJ to come out. And I started in 96 on Triple J, and that led to recovery because I was already in the ABC family. So That's how that happened. So there was a bit of radio skill behind me, but certainly not enough to warrant co-hosting of a live nationwide television show. My goodness, when I look at some of the YouTube clips, the beauty of YouTube, eh? I just think, oh, my God, how green you were. But I guess we've got to start somewhere, right?
But I reckon that's what people loved. Like I can say that watching it myself. I'm, you know, I remember sitting there going, that's not, and maybe this is where I'd say I'd compare you to Molly, is it was so pure and unadulterated fandom. You know, like the thing about Molly and you at that time, and still I think, it's not checking to say, is my hair right? Do I look cool enough? Do I whatever? It's like, I can just almost reach into a screen and touch the fact that you really love what you're doing.
I just remember the amount of pressure that we were under. I don't remember how I looked to people. I'm so glad that social media wasn't around then, because I'm sure it would have destroyed me, because we were very, very polarizing as hosts. You know, you either loved us or hated us, or you loved Dylan and you hated me, or vice versa. But yeah, there was just so much pressure to deliver, and we would have these reams of paper the night before, and that was essentially all our research for the bands. And you were just under so much pressure to do right by the bands and by the producers and by the public as well. You didn't want to stuff it up, because you'd hear about it, you'd know about it, you know. So it's lovely to hear those words, because I just remember the intense pressure. And I always felt that I wasn't funny like Dylan, but that wasn't my role. My role was to bring, you know, a little bit of seriousness to the show and get things moving, you know, where Dylan would probably kind of gag around a little bit. But I look at that period really fondly now, and I just wish I'd written down more or remembered more. But we had the 20th anniversary recently, and they did a great documentary for it. So I was able to relive a couple of those moments. But, yeah, deer in the headlights.
So was there not, in what you're saying there too, I guess, was it time to be that music fan while you were busy being
there
a fan?
There was time to be a music fan. At some points, I remember I was such a big Pulp fan, and we had Jarvis Cocker come on the show, and I couldn't do the interview. I absolutely couldn't. I gave it to Dylan. And, of course, I watch that now on YouTube and go, Gazzo, you idiot, because Dylan did a great job, believe. But I'm just sitting there like a stunned mullet, because I was literally in fan mode, and I think that's one of the times I truly lost it. But then we had some really great moments. Like I loved bringing my own toys to the set every week, and I'd always bring Barbie dolls and Ken dolls and stuff like that. And of course, the week we had Aqua, who had the big hit Barbie Girl, unbeknownst to us, they were involved with a lawsuit with Mattel, and we didn't know. I put all the Barbies on the table, and we got told to pull everything off the table that was Barbie related. And all the studio workers were all pulling the Barbies off, and I didn't know. They didn't tell me. So I'm putting them back on, you know. And there was absolute furor backstage, because Aqua said they're not coming on unless all the Barbie stuff comes. And you just remember stuff like that going, oh, God.
And you're thinking you're doing a good job by saying, oh, these people don't even know the song. Look at me. I've got to hold it together again.
I'm taken off the set.
Bring him back.
I was just going to say that time must have been so strange for you too, Jane, because if you're a music fan that's had the power of Boy George and beyond in you, you're working, but you're wanting to play in that kind of scene as well. And I just wonder, I mean, even going to gigs and stuff, you know, you guys were the biggest faces in Australian music for that period, certainly, and certainly now you're still recognisable. Did it affect even just going into gigs and stuff? Were you able to be fans, or did it just kind of get in your way?
Oh, look, it was great being able to get into any gig in Melbourne with this face. You know, every door girl, and they were door girls then, knew my face. I think I lived at the Punters Club for about 3 years on Brunswick Street in Fitzroy. That was really special. But I'd also been in a band prior, so I'd come up with a lot of the artists. So I came up with the Mavises and the Killjoys and Frente. And so, again, I had, and I think that worked in my favour with Triple J as well, because I'd been in a band and I was known by a lot of the music scene anyway, because we supported the Falling Joys up and down the East Coast and Elastica when they came to Australia. So there was there was a lot of cred, dare I say, just because I knew everybody and they knew I'd written for street press. So I was well known, and it was fine. For a couple of hairy moments where you know, guys would come up to you with cameras and just not even ask you to take a photo, they'd just put one in your face. And I used to have a friend that would act like a bodyguard sometimes, and she would give people what for in clubs. You know, she would really, yeah, if anyone was rude or disparaging, she would pretty much sort them out. So I felt safe with her. She was a big girl.
Good on her. Bless her.
You're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
I love that the more we learn about you, the more fingers in the musical industry pie you have, you know, a performer, radio, presenter. We know you do DJing as well, TV. Like, it's just, it's never ending, really. But I can imagine that some parts of your music industry life seem like quite a long time ago because, well, I know that Liz and I've got a five-year-old who's just started school, but certainly I have like the pre-kids time and then I have the post-kids time, and my worlds are extremely different. And because you're such a fixture in the Australian music industry, did you want to talk to us a bit about how family life for you has affected how you engage with the music industry or do your job?
You just have to learn to say no a lot.
To the kids or to industry?
to the music industry, I find. Yeah, you can't do everything. I have to really pick and choose what I go to these days, which I'm actually really happy about, because you find that once you have kids, you want to really spend quality time with your kids, and maybe sometimes those opening of the envelopes at certain places, you know, don't mean as much as they did to you pre-kids, you know what I mean? So I actually take pride in the fact that I only choose what I want to go to. And I try not to be out more than two nights a week. I really try and give my kids and my family as much of me as possible. So I found lockdown really great because suddenly it was like, yes, I can be home with the kids and I don't have to worry about going out. So, yes, so when I do go out, I choose my things really carefully. You just got to make those priorities. And I don't really see it as a bad thing.
Do you ever get nervous about saying no? Because we know one of the things we've kind of battled with a lot is, number one, talking about the fact that we're parents too much, and the thing will people instantly assume. I feel like once I had a baby, I had to have a sign that said I've had a baby, not a lobotomy. Like, some people kind of just assume that you're a bit less able to do things, you know, maybe baby brain, maybe whatever, whatever. Or just that fear of, you know, insecure work, which the gig economy is and the creative industries are, that fear that if you say no too often, people might stop asking. Do any of those things, have any of those experiences ever been with you? Did you ever feel like saying no was a problem, or, you know, saying I've got to go and do the kids stuff or whatever has ever been an issue?
I've never had that issue. I have never said no to work that I want to do. I will always make work. But if we're talking about, so I'm talking social events before, like I will, you know, social events, neither here nor there for me. But work, if I want to do it, I will do it and I will find a way to do it. Just today I got asked for coffee by someone quite prominent. Could I do it in the afternoon? I said, you have to work it around school pickup. And that's no problem. Most people understand. I think most people get it. Most people are quite surprised to find out I have kids. That's what I find amusing. I maybe don't fit into a mold, perhaps, of a mum, or I don't give off air of mum, so they're actually quite surprised to find out that I am mum.
You don't do much media about talking about being a mum. Was that a conscious decision too?
I don't think that defines me. I don't think being a mum defines me. It's one of the many, many things that I love and enjoy, and I'm very happy to be. But I'm not Jane Gazzo mother. I'm Jane Gazzo broadcaster, mother of two boys. That's the way I see it, and that's the way I've always, for the last 8 years, I've progressed with that.
You said you don't really have air of mother. What do you think? Can you tell me what that means? What do you mean by that?
As I said, most people are surprised to find out that I'm a mum. And I don't know if it's because I still wear band T-shirts and Converse jeans, But yeah, it's that the most, the question I guess asked most is, am I a vegetarian? And, oh, do you have any kids? And most, yes to kids, no to vegetarianism. So
you're very, no wonder commercial radio didn't know what to do with you. You've got long hair, but you've got kids. What is that about? No wonder.
Oh. We're listening to music mothers.
Another.
Given that you do, and I guess you've had a lot of experience interviewing other mums as part of that series for the Australian Music Vault, even though, and quite rightly, as you say, being a mum is one of the things you do, where you have those negotiations, though, with an industry that I guess has not been traditionally family friendly, do you have any kind of advice for industry to make it more family friendly, be it just leading by example and actually saying to people, no, you've got to meet my schedule, or you've just got to, you know, being a bit more bold about that? Or is it about more all ages gigs to kind of let the next generation know they're welcome? Because that's one thing that I know I worry about. I think, well, how my kids even know that this is a place where we want them to be? You know what I mean? Or is it the opposite? Is it like, no, let's just have a space where some people can be and other people don't? Do you have anything that kind of in your experience you think would really help the industry kind of grow and be a bit more inclusive?
I think the industry could think more about mothers, and by that I mean all mothers in the industry, and especially artists who are mothers. Speaking to Emma Donovan pre-Mother's Day, she mentioned how the Art Centre had really catered for her and her children during rehearsals because she had to go to work and didn't have child-minding options. So for her, having that there, that meant the world to her, and her backing singers have got the babies on their slings, you know, during rehearsal. So the fact that the Art Centre were thinking about catering to children and all families was really, really important. I think that's something that all the industry could be mindful about moving forward. How can we best serve those mothers that don't have childcare options, or can we help facilitate nannies when we need to do X, Y, and Z, or can we, you know, have a dedicated childminder for periods? I've noticed with the emergence of festivals like Lost Lands that are making it really family friendly, they're wonderful. And the fact that you've got this kind of play center area where the kids can get minded by professionals, things like that. They think about that at Boogie as well. I know a lot of families pitch in and bring a nanny with them for Boogie Festival, and, you know, there's about six families and all their kids are minded by the nanny in one area, things like that. But, look, it's an ongoing conversation. It's an ongoing conversation in the music industry about catering to mothers and families as much as the conversation is about women needing equal footing, about sexism in the industry, about the Me Too movement. There are a ton of conversations. I think we could probably be here all day working out what they are. But I think the fact that we're talking about it sheds light on it. And, you know, as long as we raise our voices and let people know to work around our schedules, that we set the moves and not the industry, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right. And it's taking that step, isn't it, to give people, we often say, I have to give people a chance to hate my baby. You know what I mean? Because often I just assume they're going to hate it.
They shouldn't have to, Liz. They shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to make apologies for having a baby or for working around your baby's schedule. Mm. And that mum guilt is something that comes up a lot, and you should never, ever, ever have to apologise or sacrifice that time or feel the mum guilt, because the industry should bend to you. You're a talented person. If they want you, they'll find a way to have you. And that's the way I've always operated.
You're listening to Music Mothers and Others all across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
Welcome to the Xylophone Word.
Our last question we like to ask our guests is to complete a sentence for us, to tell us what kind of music you're listening to at home with the kids that are in your house, the kids that are in your world. You could be a fantastic auntie. You could just be, I don't know, you could be rocking the school playground, playing some tunes. I'm not sure. We just like to know what kind of music that kids listen to with with parents or caregivers or aunties, etc. So Jane Gazzo, could you complete the sentence for us? The kids and I are listening to
a lot of new wave Australian 80s music, and dare I say it, my four-year-old knows the words to Pseudo Echoes, A Beat for You. Burning with desire.
Take that, hot potato.
I play a lot of 80s music. I'm a child of the 80s, and I've been subjecting them to a lot of synthesizer-esque type music, Machinations, Models, Kids in the Kitchen.
I was going to say Models. Models are a great one. The kids just seem to love the Models, I think. There's that horn section as well. Like,
it's feel-good music, especially making dinner. I've decided the TV goes off now, and the TV went off during lockdown. I didn't want to bring any of that negative stuff into the house. And I'm very happy to report that since, let's say, March last year, I no longer have the TV on in the house after school. So that has worked wonders. And we play music at dinner time, and the kids are so more relaxed, and it invokes them to use their imaginations or think about things, or they just take in the music, which is great. But it brings a lot of calm to the house.
Are you curating that music?
Yeah, I've got a Spotify playlist, which is 80s New Wave, Australian. And, yeah, I cannot speak highly enough for what it's, you know, just turning off the news full stop and just not letting any of that stuff in the house has worked wonders.
Oh, can I ask you if your boys watch you on TV? Do they see you on TV and say, there's Mum, or...?
Yeah, they watch it. They loved the sound. And Rocky went to daycare and talked about his mum being on TV. And they said, oh, and what did your mum talk about on TV? And he went, oh, socks. I didn't talk about socks on TV, but.
That's the takeaway.
He paid attention.
Thanks, yeah. Rocky. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, on that note, music veteran and sock specialist Jane Gazzo, it has been a joy to have you. Thank you so much.
Music, Mothers and Others is written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt and edited by Nina Longfellow. We're broadcast on 2SER and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. Visit us on Instagram and Facebook to find out who our upcoming guests will be. See you next time.